Hi, this is Patrick Johnson. I am really looking forward to the show today, but first, a word from our attorneys.
The information provided in this program is believed to be factual and up to date, but we don't guarantee its accuracy, and it should not be regarded as a complete analysis of the subjects discussed. Discussions and answers do not involve the rendering of personalized investment advice, but are limited to the dissemination of general information and may not be suitable for all members of the listening audience. Listening to this program should not be considered an engagement with SRS Capital Advisors, Inc. or Wealth Partner. Wealth Partner is a division of SRS Capital Advisors, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor whose principal office is located in Colorado. Patrick Johnson is an investment advisor representative of SRS Capital Advisors. Being a registered investment advisor or describing ourselves as being registered does not imply a certain level of skill or training. Welcome to Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, where we believe financial wealth is one part of overall well-being. Wealth is a rainbow, and money is one of the colors. Now, here's your host, Patrick Johnson.
Welcome to another episode of Healthy, Wealthy, Wise. This is Patrick Johnson. I'm your host today. It's going to be an interesting show today. I have been inspired to share these stories. I'm a Southern boy by upbringing, and I'm a therefore, a storyteller. I've written a novel called One Conscious Breath, which tells my story and my why behind just wanting to bring some peace and love and kindness into the world. And what I mean by that is just doing what I can to let spirit flow through me and leave the world a better place than when I found it, because I've been used as a good instrument in the hands of the surgeon, so to speak. So this Healthy, Wealthy, Wise offering really comes from the heart, and I guess we'll put this in the wisdom genre of this offering. And the first story is from my novel, and I don't know if many of you know my background, but I took a sabbatical from about age 38 to mid-40s, and it was a season of my life that was beautiful. We went and started a little organic farm in the Southeast with my kids when they were young, 4 and 2, when we left, and maintained my practice from there, but it was really just a focus on family and community building and living closer to the land. And I didn't know the first thing about farming. I would learn everything on YouTube the night before we would execute. And it was very much just this city boy come to country and was completely out of my element. And we bought this property back on the backside of Lookout Mountain, right on the Tennessee-Georgia border. So we were just tucked away in the northwest corner of Georgia. And right across the border was Chattanooga, Tennessee, for any of you that might know that town. Well, we were surrounded by just 10 acres of woods. Each house around us had about the same, so everything felt pretty spread out. But our neighbors were not happy with us because we were coming in and opening up pasture and putting in ponds and building larger structures, all within a nice buffer, a nice forested buffer between my property and theirs. But we were doing that on what they considered to be their hunting land. We had bought property in the midst of this enclave of sorts, a family compound, and we had bought it from one of the brothers, not knowing that they all kind of shared the land together, but they were all family, and we were not. We were the first folks there that were not family. So there was just this intensity there that was unfortunate, but we had to deal with. I really wanted to fit in, and the book is full of these kinds of stories. The novel, by the way, is called One Conscious Breath. If you want to find it on Amazon, and let me know what you think, or come by the office and I'll give you a copy. But there was this uniform that all the men wear, and it was, broken in jeans, maybe Carhartts if they could be afforded, t-shirts, work boots, they better be broken in, and, some blade glasses and usually a trucker cap, something like that. That was the uniform back there. And one day my neighbors decided that they needed to get rid of some of the weeds around their property. So they started a fire, a controlled burn, and it spread over onto my property. It was kind of a mess. And my neighbor had a buddy that was in the Forest Service, and he called his buddy to come in and just push like a fire break with a bulldozer. So just the way it worked back there, bulldozer showed up a couple hours later, and the guy pushed this big road, which became my neighbor's kind of our property boundary, if you will. And he used to like to ride his side-by-side and shoot things, everything from deer to cans to old rusted out cars that were back there in the woods. That was a favorite activity of his. Well, I wasn't crazy about that with little kids and bullets flying and this, that, and the other, but he didn't like me, didn't like that I was there. And I think enjoyed tormenting me a little bit, like riding up on his side by side with a pistol on his hip. He always said was for snakes, but he was flexing, no question about it. Cooler of Natty Light on the front of the handlebars. And he would just sit there and stare at me while I would be working, and I'd try to make conversation, and it was just this weird dynamic. So we weren't off on a good foot, because I did at some point say, look, man, you know, this is my property. You can't be riding a four-wheeler all over it. I'm happy to be buds and get along, but this dynamic is not working for me as neighbors. So why don't you just stay on your side of the property and I'll maintain mine? But we were still unfenced. Well, there was that for a few months, just this kind of weird dynamic with my neighbor and therefore the whole family. And I was worried if I was getting into this Hatfield and McCoy story is, and I didn't want to go there, but I was there to serve my family, be a part of the community, just enjoy life. And I didn't have much tolerance for those kinds of headaches, but I did want to fit in. Well, one day we decided to go and pick up some Nigerian pygmy goats. They're just small goats. Picture a goat, 30, 40 pounds, tiny little things. It was actually a gift from my father. Having grown up on a farm, I think my father, in retrospect, was actually messing with me because they're just like, we nicknamed one of the goats Diablo. We actually renamed him from Oreo to Diablo because he was just crazy. All this is in the book. I'm not going to prattle on too much about that. But the point of sharing this day is that we had to go pick up these goats because my dad, as a middle market M&A attorney, had won them at some highfalutin auction in Georgia. And he called to see if we wanted them. And the kids, to their great delight, heard about getting these little tiny goats and wanted them. And so we were just starting to build out the farm. It would be a good experience for them. We thought it would be fun. Didn't know the first thing about goats, didn't know how to fence them, anything, and learned a lot of lessons the hard way. But my daughter, Lauren, had lost a fish, lost a frog, not lost it, but like they died. And then the chicken that she had, that she had named Chick Chicken, fell out of my son's arms and broke its neck and died right there. She was 4 years old, maybe five. We were starting to seriously worry about like detachment disorder, whatever that is, where one has a hard time bonding because she had so much loss in her life. We went to pick up these goats, and one goat had a pink collar and a single, well, you know, two horns, but it looked like a deformed horn to me. It was kind of looked kind of single. And then there, the other goat that we ended up naming Diablo was named Oreo, kind of a black and white speckled billy goat. And so we were getting him out of the truck, and our property was far from done. You know, there was patches of grass here and there, but we were clearing land. We were poking a well. We were under construction on some big structures. It was just a mess everywhere. And there's thistly stuff that grows very quickly in the southeast once land's been cleared. And it kind of trips you up. So there were stumps all over that I hadn't scooped out with the excavator, but it chopped the trees, branches, just not good terrain all around us. But it was time to move the goats from the back of the truck to the pen that I had built. So my wife hopped up into the back of the truck to unlock the gate that we had, or the gate to the pen that we had in the back of the truck that was holding the two goats. And one, Oreo, Diablo, was just going crazy, like jumping up and down, just out of control, crazy. And then the other one, Star, was a little bit more docile. And so the way it worked out, my wife ended up grabbing Star and getting off the back of the box of the truck bed and was walking toward the pen. And I was trying to get Diablo. And then I felt this kind of commotion over my right shoulder. And I looked around and Jenny was looking at me, wasn't able to hold on to Star, and Star started bouncing off into the thistly, stump-laden, nasty dirt pasture and headed toward Keith's property where the firebreak was. We weren't fenced with a perimeter fence yet. So that day, I was not in mountain uniform. I was wearing what I wore in Colorado. It was a pair of shorts, flip-flops, like one of those Hawaiian shirts. I think I had a visor on. I was looking anything but mountain man-ish. I was looking like Colorado post river day kind of a guy. And so Star goes loping into the pasture and I go kind of like, you know, squat waddling after Star, trying, hey, come here, Star, come here. You know, I'm going to catch this goat, right? Like goat, they're designed to evade predators that are lungy. So, you know, Star's not coming. She lets me get within 5 feet of her and then she'll chew a little bit, look at me. And then I swear she smiled. And just as I would be close enough to get her, she'd, you know, lope bound weird goat thing another 20, 30 feet away. Well, I was determined to get this goat because my daughter had already claimed Star as her own, you know, like the white goat with the pink collar, you know, that was my daughter's. And she was so excited about having this goat. And Star really was cute. But this was not going well. And my wife looked at me and I looked at her and I could read it all over her mother's, you know, in her eyes was her mother's heart, which was get that goat. And so, you know, I kind of leveled up with trying to squat waddle here, Star, trying to pick some grass, you know, hand it. I was just looking like a complete idiot. And yet I didn't know what else to do. I just needed to get within striking distance and then lunge. And, you know, I'm sure I could have wrestled the goat to the ground or whatever and held on to it. Getting it was the hard part because, again, their design just bound away. Like their muscles are just fast, small twitch. And they just like, as soon as you act, they respond. It's a bing and they're kind of gone. So I get really close. I make a lunge. Star bings. And she's at this point, like fed up with me. She's like, I'm getting away from this sucker. And Diablo is just apoplectic. Like he is just bouncing up and down in the truck. Lauren's crying. My wife's looking at me. I'm like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. So I go running, just shredding my legs, flip-flops flying, you know, my feet feel like they're flying past my ears. And Star's just kind of bounding away. And we get to the property line and I'm like, I'm a little bit nervous about that, but whatever, I'm getting this goat. So she goes across the property to my neighbor's property. Now I'm on his property and it would not be a stretch to think that he would scare me off with a couple of rounds in the dirt around me. Like, you know, that's the way it was back there. But I thought, I don't care. I'm going for it. So I sprint across the road and I just sense there's something and it's not quite right. And I realize, oh no, they're out driving around on their side by side shooting at stuff. And they're right there. Well, I slowly turn to my right and there's Keith and his dad. And this is all in the One Conscious Breath novel, but they had turned the engine off and they were just watching all of this. And I looked at them and they looked at me and back there, so much was said with the eyes. And I just, there was nothing I could do but look away, you know? And I kind of looked at the ground and I kind of smiled and Keith and his dad were just, they were just lounging like it was a Sunday lounger, you know, boots cocked up on the dashboard, shotguns across their laps and, you know, snuff in their mouths and beer cans in their hands, just smiling, just thinking this is, what are we watching here? I mean, I might as well have been wearing a sparkly bikini, throwing flowers into the wind with a basket tucked in the crook of my arm. Like that's, it was that foreign to them. And I looked at them and they just looked at me and the dad, Donnie said, bet you're hunting a goat, ain't you? And Keith just couldn't resist himself. And he just started crying, laughing, just goat, hell you say, that boy's hunting a midget unicorn. They turned on the engine, spit intentionally on my property, intentionally chucked their beer cans onto my property. I was standing right in front of their side by side and they accelerated and like went past me. And there was in fact a deer in the back of the bed that they had shot earlier that morning. And that was their morning's entertainment. And it was just, I was never that used to being that out of sorts. I was always the guy that was on top of the game, the guy that was winning, you know, and I just felt defeated on so many levels. And Star was gone across their property. And the way the story ends, I'll leave it for the book. You can go back and read it there, but it actually ends in a very interesting, fun way many years later. But I'm going to take a break here, go to the quick note that's supposed to be in the middle of the show, and I'm going to come back with another 10 minutes and wrap up the story with some thoughts. It has a great ending. Hi, this is Patrick Johnson, and I want to take 1 minute here at the break for a personal note and a request. I've been having a lot of fun creating the show for you each week, and it's a pleasure to interview interesting guests about important topics and provide content which I hope will enhance listeners' overall well-being. And as you might imagine, I'm very intentional about how I spend my life energy, and I spend a lot of time working on this show for you. And I'm also very intentional about how I spend my hard-earned money, and I pay a hearty sum for the airwaves each Saturday morning. This is both energy and time, which I have delighted in investing thus far. But here's the thing, we're around 20 shows in right now, and I have no sense for the show's audience. It is apparently impossible to accurately track listeners, so I simply don't know whether this is a good use of my energy or finances, and as a committed steward of both, this bothers me. So the Healthy Wealthy Wise show is one of many activities Wealth Partner promotes in an effort to help make the world a better place. And I just need to determine if this effort should be prioritized over the others. So if you're willing, I'm simply asking that you help me gain a bit of clarity around all of this. Please visit the Wealth Partner website and just say hi. Let me know if you're enjoying the show and perhaps even submit any topics you'd like to hear conversation about. Our website is wealthpartner.com. That's WELLTH partner.com. So that's it. Thank you for listening. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Healthy Wealthy Wise on KRDO News Radio. Here's your host, Patrick Johnson.
Okay, we're back. So I am telling the story of the what I call the dwarf unicorn, the pygmy unicorn, the midget unicorn, as my ignorant neighbors referred to it. And it was a moment where I just had to embrace the position that I found myself in, having moved to this area of the country that we intentionally chose. We wanted to move to a place where we could spend a season and raise Luke and Lauren in a way so that they could see that love transcends socioeconomic strata. You know, we were living in Cherry Creek up in Denver and then ultimately in an affluent suburb, and our path was written for us pretty clearly. And, you know, it was a great path by anybody's measure. It just wasn't resonating with us. So we did this alternate lifestyle, but we were living in a rough part of the mountain. And I told you the story. So Star has gone off onto Keith's property. I looked around a little bit, but I was too nervous to go too deep in there. And I knew that I wasn't going to catch. So I walked back, you know, told Jenny and Luke and Lauren, hey, you know, Star's gone off. And Lauren was sad. And Jenny and I kind of parented her through that. And it was just this crazy day. Well, fast forward a couple of days later, and we're out in the garden, and we hear this, like this big explosion, and this black, acrid, nasty smoke just suddenly plumes from, I don't know, maybe a half mile away. It was one of our neighbor's homes. So I get on the four-wheeler, and I go racing down there, and it, like, a guy named Danny, he had lived there, didn't have running water, would come to our well to actually pump up gallon jugs so he could have running water. And but he was a musician, lived there, and Keith didn't like Danny's trailer, didn't like it being too close to his property. And Keith had friends in the Forest Service. We don't really know what happened, but that trailer went up in smoke really fast. And then we couldn't get anywhere near it because the heat, but also because rounds for Danny's pistols were cooking off, and it was just dangerous. So fire department shows up 30, 45 minutes later, and it's burned to the ground. And Keith just stood there and kind of smiled through the whole thing. And my neighbors and I, we kind of knew what was going on, but that's the type of guy Keith was. Now, this is my next door neighbor and is the brother of the guy who I bought the property from. And Donnie is the dad, kind of the patriarch of this whole compound. And, you know, some time went by from the unicorn story. And during that time, Keith blew up my neighbor's house, we think, allegedly. And all fingers point that way anyway, but nothing was ever proven. And then his son, gut shot my dog from his front porch because my dog wandered onto his property. And that was a whole story in of itself. He shot one of my other dogs because that dog went running up toward him while Keith was on his four-wheeler. And Keith always carried the pistol and shot him. That's just the way things got handled back there. And this was a pet of ours who, you know, in that one I can kind of understand because Blue, when he would run up barking, so excited to run beside the four-wheeler, it was kind of terrifying. And so, but there was a lot of the neighborly thing that I'm referencing as well with that. And so Blue got shot, Bear got shot, and Billy disappeared. That was another one of our dogs. And you know, we attribute three of our dogs being killed to our neighbors. So fast forward another year or so, things aren't going well with the neighbor, whatever, but I'm accepting my place, trying to earn my stripes in that community. And I was getting something of a reputation of being willing to work hard. I was humble. I was ready to learn. I had hired a couple of master carpenters and a journeyman plumber and an electrician. And I was just learning how to do all of this stuff. And I explained to them that I wanted to learn, that I had a high level of respect for the trades and for all that they knew, and that I wanted to learn. And so I would be on the job before they showed up. I would be working long after they left, all trying to build out this farm for my family and just kind of live this dream that I had always had. And I just reminded them that, hey, you know, if you're in the middle of a cut or if you're towing in a nail a certain way, or if you're putting plaster on or whatever, drywall spackling on with a certain angle, and if I stop and ask why, then just remember who's writing the checks and just teach me. And so I was getting something of a reputation in the community of being a good guy and, you know, really there to be a part of the community and to be a part of that lifestyle that I really loved, a very intentional, sustainable, in touch with the earth farm kind of lifestyle. So I think Keith might have been softening a bit because of the reputation and the way that I'd handled the dog shootings. And I had said, you know, maybe just if a dog's on your property, give me a call and I'll come get him. And that just would be kinder. And he was like, kind, you know, it just was a foreign concept on that phone call. So one day Keith's beloved bird dog walks onto our property and our birds are free ranging. We had about 60 chickens and guineas and they were free ranging, and a bird dog loves to run down chickens and just kill them for sport. So our front porch looked out over a beautiful pasture. It was all grown in by now, and then to a pond, and then across the pond was some woods. And I saw Hank, Keith's dog, across the pond, but you know, too close to my chickens, which were in the pasture between me and the pond. And then Hank could easily run across the dam and get after the birds. And I just needed him gone. So I picked up one of my heavy hitting rifles. It was a 308 with a nice scope on it. And I fired a couple of rounds out just to put him, you know, a good ways away from Hank, but throw up some dirt around him and try to scoot him off the property. And he just wasn't responding. You know, that's, he grew up around that and it was just more gunfire and he wasn't at all motivated to move. So I gave Keith a call and I said, hey, Keith, Hank's over here on the property. I really need him to get off the property. He's probably going to start messing with the chickens at all free ranging. Can you come get him? And Keith said, that's not Hank. He's on the chain in the backyard. And I said, well, I'm looking at him through my scope here and it's Hank. So I'm basically, you know, the guy's killed three of my dogs and I've got his beloved bird dog in my sights, literally. And he said, well, you know, let me come over with the four-wheeler and I'll see if Hank. So I said, sure, come on over. Well, a couple minutes later, I hear the four-wheeler in the driveway. I go out and meet Keith at the gate. He will not come on my property because, you know, what goes down on my property, it's my story about that. And that's just the way the law was around there. Lots of stories about that and Sheriff Smitty. But coming back to this one, Keith won't come on my property. He said, if it's Hank, he'll be here in minutes. He'll show up and he'll hop up right out here beside me. But it ain't Hank. It can't be. I don't know where that dog is. He can't be on your property though. Well, you know, here comes Hank. You know, he's running along. And so there's this moment where Hank's loping toward the gate, happy as can be, and bringing an energy that, you know, only a dog can bring. Just always happy. In fact, I have heard the quote many times and I agree with it that I aspire to be half the man that my dog thinks I am. So here's Hank coming toward his owner. I mean, they're clearly a love bond. It meant a lot to Keith that I hadn't pulled that trigger and taken care of Hank in a way that he had proven three times he would have handled business. And so there's this moment, it's one of the sweetest moments of my life, full of just good puppy dog energy, yes, but even more between humans, love and grace and humility and overcoming. And he looked at me as Hank hopped up into the side by side and he just said, well, thank you. And I said, absolutely, Keith, you know, it just seems like that's what good neighbors should do. And that was it. And he just held my eye for a moment longer. And it was like love did this neural pathway reset. It was just so cool. Before I knew it, the whole family was being very nice to us. Anytime we needed something, I could borrow a tool. I could use an implement of his for the tractor. His dad started just coming by to chat. Donnie, we became friends. It was really beautiful. And I really counted them as friends. And we were sad when we left that we had to leave that community. And I love that story because I think it illustrates a few things. You know, my goal in life is just to be a flow through. I don't take any credit for behaving in a certain way, but I do like being in touch with God and the divine. And I think we're all designed to stay in that kind of God frequency, that resonance with spirit that In the Bible, it talks about love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and gentleness and faithfulness and self-control. And these are the fruit of the Spirit. And with the same intonation and inflection, I can say anger, jealousy, hatred, rage, suspicion, and it just has a different energy to it. And I really believe to my core, and hence the whole reason for my professional offering, the reason for my personal existence, frankly, is just to try to line up with that energy, resonate in my natural frequency, and then just watch the magic unfold. And the more people we have doing that, the more beauty there is in the world, the more peace and love and joy. We're just resonating with one another on the God frequency. And so it's not like we're doing anything in our own power. We're just lining up with that, which is beyond us, through whatever modality, medium, religion, or otherwise that works for you. And as those elements, as we watch those emotions and habits, I guess, the fruit flow through us, and we see the beauty that unfolds around us, it becomes a snowball. So, you know, Dave Ramsey has a conversation about the debt snowball, and it's a great financial principle about how to pay off debt. Well, in our world, you know, we see wealth as a rainbow, truly. Like, we have a deep conviction. We won't work with people unless they have a willingness to at least frame their wealth in the context of all dimensions of their wealth. It's multidimensional, not singular. So we want people's sense of well-being and peace to snowball. But it's like a well-being snowball instead of the debt payoff snowball. It's an overall well-being. And the more that you lean into your own well-being and partner with other people, my firm or other people or however you want to do this, but link arms, partner with them. We're all here to help wipe the mud out of each other's eyes and see the beauty that's around us and in us. The kingdom, as Jesus, I think, called it. It's just right behind the veil, and just a little bit of humility, a little bit of grace. It has so much power. And teacher after teacher after teacher has proven this to us. We can let these stories serve as inspiration for us to go out there and just hold a little bit more of that through the day, not in our own strength, but in the strength of that which is beyond us and which wants to flow through us in intimate relationship with us. So that was the show for today. It's just a Saturday of sitting at my desk trying to share some wisdom that I've learned through my own life experience, and then hoping that listeners find value in this in one or multiple dimensions of their well-being. So thanks for listening today. I'll see you next Saturday.
Listeners are encouraged to consult a professional advisor before implementing any of the strategies presented. The material in this program is for education purposes and is not intended to provide investment, tax, legal, health, or medical advice. Past performance does not guarantee future success. Information in this program is not an offer to buy or sell, or a solicitation of any offer to buy or sell the investments, investment strategies, securities, or well-being services mentioned herein. All expressions of opinion reflect the judgment of the speakers as of the date of the radio show and are subject to change and are not statements of material fact. Opinions are based on knowledge and experience, but may not include all of the supporting facts to verify these opinions. The advisor may not transact business in states where it is not appropriately registered, excluded, or exempted from registration. Individualized responses to persons that involve either the effecting of transaction in securities or the rendering of personalized investment advice for compensation will not be made without registration or exemption.